Welcome to the Confidence and Communication Podcast. I'm your life coach, Jessica Dumas. I'm a professional speaker and coach who empowers women everywhere to use their voice to take up space and change the world. My goal is to help you speak with clarity and confidence while giving you practical guidance and tools by sharing real life experiences of overcoming. So turn up the volume and grab a pen. You're going to want to write this down. Jessica Dumas Coaching and Training and the Confidence and Communication Podcast is overflowing with appreciation to our first podcast sponsor, the Johnston Group, Inc. The Johnston Group provides employee benefits to more than 30,000 businesses across Canada. Thank you so much for supporting my vision and investing in the podcast. Please accept my extreme gratitude, which will help get the message of self-love, healing, and growth out to a greater audience. Hey everyone, thanks for coming back to the podcast. I have an interview that I'm about to introduce to you, and this could definitely be one of my most favorite interviews. I was so blown away by my guest's knowledge, her incredible perspective, her knowledge. She's brilliant. She's a healer. And after our call, and I wish that I would have done it on the recording, but whatever. I took some time to tell her that I know that no matter what, she is going to be very successful because of her passion and because she is truly in her purpose. So check out this episode. I hope that you will consider sharing it with someone, and I ask you to do this all the time, but if there's a mother, a sister, a cousin, a brother, a friend, anybody that you think would benefit from hearing this message and from taking the opportunity to reach out to Deanna and invite her as a speaker, take some of her training, ask her about her beading program. Deanna Starr at Mishkanak Occupational Therapy is truly incredible. Thank you so much, Deanna, for all of your work. And to everyone else, enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, welcome to the Confidence and Communication Podcast. I'm really excited to share a really inspiring message with you today. I have a guest. She is a one-on-one client. Her name is Deanna Starr. She's an occupational therapist and artist and citizen of Little Pine First Nation. She's the founder of Mishkanak Occupational Therapy, an Indigenous children and family OT practice. Deanna has dedicated her life and career to creating a new path in occupational therapy based on the values of her community, with the goal of creating excellence in occupational therapy for Indigenous children and their families. And I'm so excited to have her on here and share with you her work, because it's really, really incredible. So welcome, Deanna. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm really, really excited to be here. I've been wanting to be on a podcast for a really long time, so I'm really excited.
Good, good. I'm so happy to have you on here. And I shared on my Instagram this week that my podcast now has over 11,000 downloads, which is really exciting. So it's getting out there, and I love it. So let's talk about you and your work, because that's what I want to highlight today. What do you do on an everyday basis?
Yeah, so I am a pediatric occupational therapist, and my career has basically taken me working mostly with Indigenous communities. So a lot of my work is either in school. So I go to the school and provide occupational therapy services in the school, or I go to a clinic and then I work with families there. Essentially, I mean, it's been a really long path. I've found that a lot of my work, I had to really create it myself, create the therapy myself, because occupational therapy, all of it was created from a Western lens, and it just didn't align with the clients or that I was working with and the children, their realities. So I really dove deep into learning about different healing modalities and just kind of figuring out how could I best be of service. And yeah, so that's kind of how it took me. And a little bit about occupational therapy is it's a health profession. It's a regulated health profession. So we're all governed by a provincial body. the core tenets of the profession are promoting independence and function so that essentially whoever the client is can do whatever it is that they want to do. It's an incredibly broad profession. So there is like so many occupational therapists have such different roles. And essentially mine, children is a little bit, I find it, it's really complicated because children, well, the therapy is through play, but children don't really have much control over their lives. So mm-hmm. a lot of the therapy actually should incorporate a parent or caregivers. So yeah, it's about the mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual wellness. That's what the core tenets of occupational therapy are.
Amazing. I love that earlier in your career, you recognized that you need to adjust your work to something that is really meaningful for you. And you didn't want just the typical OT career, like you were in it for a purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was in school, I never thought I would be working with children or in pediatrics at all. That wasn't really something I was interested in at the beginning. I really wanted to work in like stroke rehab because I was really interested in the nervous system. But in my second year of school, we have to do these fieldwork practicums. And I was paired up with another Indigenous occupational therapist, and we worked in First Nations communities. And it was then that I realized that working with children is absolutely what I was meant to do. It just came easily to me in the way that, like, I think I'm playful myself. Like, I feel like I have like a very, not childlike, but like essentially, yeah, like I play with the children. And that's something apparently that like not every person can do. And it just came like really easily to me. And then I had a really good mentor in my school. She was one of the only Indigenous people in occupational therapy publicly talking about the issues in our profession related to oppression of Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And she really opened my eyes to see that there is a lot that needs to change. And just going by the status quo of occupational therapy is not going to support any of the communities that I work with. I really had to dig deeper if I was going to be able to do occupational therapy in a way that is really meaningful to my clients and to myself. So
yeah. I love it. And I know when we first met and I started learning about what you did, and I think throughout our time working together, a lot of my part was trying to understand what is it that you're doing exactly. So, I mean, it was really great to work with you for sure and learn about your work, because I swear every call you were blowing my mind with something with regards to the work that you practice and the passion that keeps you moving forward in doing this work. So I feel like for myself and maybe many other people, the first time we hear about an occupational therapist is when something is wrong. So a kid is not fitting into a classroom, or there's situations that are wrong. And so this is probably where you end up meeting a lot of your clients, is in those situations.
Yeah, that's actually like a whole professional issue, is as occupational therapists, we don't really know how to explain what we do. There's a lot of like confusion because we're not quite physical therapists. We're not quite psychologists. We're somehow in the middle of that. And I mean, that's something that I really liked about. That's why I chose the profession, was because even when I was in my undergrad, because you have to get a undergrad degree before you go on to get a master's of occupational therapy. When I was in my undergrad, I saw that there was like an occupation, and the word occupational therapy means anything that anyone does throughout their life. So it's literally encompasses everything. And that's what I really liked about it, and why I chose a profession over physical therapy, is because it was so broad, and because I'm such a creativity and freedom are some of my core needs out of life. I really found that in occupational therapy. So a lot of the times as an occupational therapist, I see families and children that they're struggling in some sort of way. And that's why they are requesting an occupational therapist, a lot of times there's some sort of disability label, like autism or ADHD or intellectual disability or oppositional defiance disorder, all those types of diagnoses. So I often see children that have some sort of diagnosis, and I think I have a little bit of a different view on essentially, I guess, what the problem is, because what we're trained to do as within the medical model is see the issue as just the child. So something's wrong with the child's brain chemistry, that they have ADHD or there's something wrong. The medical model teaches us that there's something wrong with the actual child. But throughout my life experiences and how I was raised, I see there's just a lot of patterns that I keep coming up with. And I've really come to believe that there's nothing wrong with the children. I mean, our traditional teachings tell us that children are born perfect, and it's not our responsibility as adults to change them. Mm-hmm. It's our responsibility to nurture their inherent gifts. And I find that a lot of the children that have these quote unquote disabilities, there's this one meme or like visual that I always see in my head with respect to essentially my work, is that we're basing a fish's skill on its ability to walk when, you know, a fish isn't meant to walk. So I'm kind of butchering that.
the quote.
Yeah, the quote. But there's like that visual where you're like, even like the developmental norms or all of these assessments that as occupational therapists we do, they're like comparing children against developmental norms of other children. And I don't really believe that we should be comparing children against one another. Mm-hmm. Each child has their own individual learning styles, individual needs, and all that. And it's my view that we should be looking at like, what are their gifts and how do we create the environment where they're able to shine?
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I'm sure that for so many people, families, caregivers, educators, I'm sure that it's such a breath of fresh air to hear you come out and say that, because many of us know, like, we have our own experiences of challenges that when we grew up, we heard someone say something about us and it puts us in this pigeonhole of identity, and that's who you are. And that's why you're a troublemaker, or that's why you can't accomplish something or whatever, which is heartbreaking. And that's what we grew up with. And so I love it so much to know that the kids and the families that have an opportunity to learn about your work and the support that you offer is completely unique. It's different. People aren't having these conversations.
Yeah. Thank you so much for saying that. I found that actually before I started working with you, I found that I was just like, am I just a bad therapist? Because I was like, not that nothing's changing, but like, because these issues are not individualistic issues. Mm-hmm. These issues are social, political issues. And it really, I found that, like, yes, one-on-one therapy is incredibly important and needed, and like really where a lot of really great work happens. And there's also needs to be a lot of change in our social, political system. My expertise is around the nervous system, and I think back to my childhood and how I viewed myself as a child and as a young person. I was convinced that I had ADHD. And then I was also like, I would always get in trouble in class for daydreaming. Once I got really, really knowledgeable about the nervous system and how trauma impacts our nervous system, I noticed that all of the symptoms that I was correlating with ADHD, inability to focus, a lot of trouble with being organized, rejection, sensitive dysphoria, that it's named, all of those things, I found that it was really correlated with being in fight, flight, or freeze. So that daydreaming that I was always getting in trouble with, that's actually a dissociative state of the nervous system. So it's a freeze response, which means that my nervous system was too overwhelmed with individual trauma that I was experiencing, also generational trauma, because that lives in our cells, and it really, really lives in our nervous system. And the daydreaming was dissociation and my freeze response. And then the hyperactivity, like I was really, like I needed to be moving at all times, and the fidgeting, and that was the fight and flight response. So I don't see all of these diagnosis as really, because when you diagnose a child with ADHD, then there's something wrong with that child, you know?
Right.
We see them as, well, oh, they have ADHD, or they have oppositional defiance disorder. Or is oppositional defiance disorder is essentially they're just in fight mode all the time.
Right. Yeah.
And for some people, a diagnosis can really feel like, okay, now I know what's wrong, so now I can make the steps to change. So I'm not hating on diagnoses, because they also, their path to funding as well. But I just find that it's very surface level. It doesn't get to actually the root of the problem, because the root of the problem is the ongoing trauma that a lot of children are experiencing. And I think that's where I've been involved in policy work as well. And I think that's where I see a lot of change happening that way too, because it's the systems that are continuously traumatizing families and communities, and it's not necessarily an individual issue.
Okay, wow. Like, again, you're blowing my mind with the things that you're talking about, because one of my sons really struggled in school, and over time I would have shared some of that with you. But even in my own research of, like, where do we get help? How do I support him? Like, I feel so emotional right now. Like, I could cry, because it's so frustrating for kids and parents that they just want their kid to do well in school. And I think, to me, what's even more important than my kid doing well in school is feeling safe and feeling welcome at school. And in my experience, kids who have had many of these diagnoses, they don't feel like they fit in. They're immediately booted out. They have to go to special classes. They have to see special people, and that support is good, but they're treated differently. And at the end of the day, if you're treated differently, you don't feel like you belong. And that's so disruptive to kids and to families and their entire lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about the nervous system, there's like one main thing that the nervous system needs in order to feel, or in order to be regulated, and that is an embodied sense of safety. So, and then when you think about schools, and even just the history of schools in this country, for a lot of Indigenous children, Indigenous parents, Indigenous grandparents, schools are not safe places. And just because it didn't happen to this generation, how, when we talk about intergenerational trauma, that lives in our nervous system. Trauma essentially is, it's not about like what happened to you, it's about what's happening inside of your body. And if children, if they don't feel safe at school, they're not going to be in a regulated state, and then they're automatically going to be in the fight or flight. And then that causes the behaviors that happen when you're in a fight or flight. Are so many kids run away. Like, runners are a big thing in school. And that's just a flight response. And like, it's not because they're like a bad kid or anything like that. It's literally their biology is telling them that they're not safe and they need to run. It's actually an incredibly intelligent system. And any of these behaviors that children are doing, there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with them. Their body is doing what it believes is going to keep it safe. And the same with, there's lots of, say it's like talking back or whatever. That's the fight response. Mm-hmm. Because they don't feel safe. So their option is either to flight, so run, or there's like a ton of different behaviors. Avoidance is a huge flight behavior, or fighting. So that can look like defiance, And a lot of behaviors that teachers find really challenging and parents find really challenging. And when we're talking about children and the nervous system, this is where I find my biggest role as an occupational therapist is supporting the parents or the adults, because I'm not in these children's lives every single day. It's the parents or the teachers that are. So how children learn to regulate their nervous system, and I'll just explain what regulation means really quickly. It's like a complex system, but essentially you're able to feel balance in your life. So you can handle challenging emotions, or essentially you're able to go into fight, flight, freeze, and then you can bring your body back to the calm state. So it's not being calm all the time. Our nervous system is evolved for to have fight, flight, freeze for a reason. They keep us safe. So, but regulation is being able to go into fight, flight, freeze, and then return back to regulation. So that's like a really, not the full definition, but like kind of a gateway into understanding what regulation is. But the way children learn, it's called self-regulate. The name is really misleading, because children can't self-regulate. They actually need an adult who they have a trusting relationship with to be able to show them. Like expecting a child to regulate their emotions, say they're really angry, expecting them to regulate their emotion without ever being taught how, it's not going to work. They need to be shown how. And how they do that is with relationship with adults. So a lot of my work is showing the adults in the children's lives how to self-regulate and what does it mean to feel safe in your body, because so many people in this world don't have that feeling. I didn't even know what that meant, like embodied safety, until I really, really started doing this work on myself and creating my beadwork program, because that's how I learned self-regulation. So a lot of my work is showing adults how to self-regulate, and it's really a slow and also challenging process, because it requires us to look within. Like there's nothing outside of us that's really going to help us. The only thing that's going to support ourselves in learning to self-regulate is ourselves, and it requires a lot of accountability within our lives, and also a lot of looking at your inner child. That was something that I really had to do, and that can be scary for a lot of people.
Wow. Yeah. You're totally blowing my mind again, honestly. Like, I find it very fascinating and I find it very relatable in my own life and with lots of people that I can think of, like just listening to you, these people's faces are flashing through my head and my heart is just like, oh my God, like, I feel like without knowing what you know, obviously, because you're so intelligent, you're so knowledgeable about all of this stuff, which is like really incredible and very impressive. And it makes me very proud to know you. But I feel like I've been able to, in some ways, learn how to regulate my own nervous system, again, without, you know, really knowing what I was doing. But for a lot of people, it's really scary to go there, right? I've done inner child work. I've, you know, worked with therapists. I've in my own coaching practices and stuff like that. I'll take myself through programs that I make up, kind of thing. But people are afraid to do that. Like people are afraid to say like, hey, why am I feeling this way? And then actually go through the work of doing it. So how have you found your work if kids need parents or caregivers to be the ones to take care of themselves so that they can be that person for the kids? That must be incredibly challenging to know that and then having to explain people, well, actually, this is how it works. So it's on you, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it is really difficult because it's much simpler to blame a bad kid.
Yeah, especially teachers and, you know, anybody who's having a hard time with the kid.
Yeah.
It's so easy to do that. Totally.
Yeah, that's definitely the hardest part of my job. But nothing's going to change unless people really, like, blaming is the opposite of what needs to happen. And even like all these, like blaming is a fight response. So I think programming with teachers have the hardest job, the hardest job in the world. They have so many children that they have to care for, and not only care for, but they also have to teach them how to read and write. And you know what? When a child is in a state of fight or flight, they actually can't learn. And it's also not even the teacher's fault. If a teacher is having a really hard time with the child, it's not even the teacher's fault, because the teacher's in a system that is not designed to support child development.
Yeah.
So even me, like, I shouldn't even blame the teachers for blaming the children, because it's not even the root of the issue is not, oh, teachers are blaming the child. The root of the issue is the system is set up so that teachers don't have the supports that they need to be able to provide what the children need. So I think providing teachers with their own self-regulation tools is really important. And that's a big part of my beadwork program. Because, yeah, it is also really scary. Actually, I shouldn't even say that it's scary. It seems scary. Like, the thought about looking within can feel really, really scary. But that's a big reason of why I named my business Miskinak Occupational Therapy. And Miskinak means turtle in Cree. And because it's really slow. Like, there's literally no rush. And even the fact, like, even just telling someone that there's no rush, you actually don't have to do anything, takes the pressure off. So there's really, it's really, really gentle, like really good nervous system healing work is really gentle, and consent is the foundation of it. Like, if someone doesn't want to do something, it doesn't matter. Like, there's, consent is always a big part, because especially like boundaries and consent in our society right now, essentially how the life that a lot of people live requires us to continuously override our boundaries. And that's step one in my, with my practice or with children and with adults, is teaching people how to feel an embodied sense of their boundaries, because we've been so trained since birth, essentially before birth, in utero, to override our boundaries. Like, if there's a specific sensation in our body when we know we want to say yes, like we know in deep in our body when what that actually feels like, or when we want to say no, there is a sensation in our body that tells us we mean no, but we're trained not to listen to that.
Right.
Yeah. And learning that has been like, that's been like an everyday practice for me. And there's this sense, like in medical terminology, it's called interoception. So it's ability to feel what's going on within our body, so inside. Mm-hmm. And we have, I believe it's 7 times as many interoceptive receptors. So what's the ability, we have 7 times more of the ability to feel what's going on inside our body than our other senses. So like sight, smell, sound, touch, all of that. Like,
oh,
yeah, it's really, we have a profound ability to feel what's going on within ourselves. But like what that's saying is, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
So we're not taught to form those neural pathways. We essentially don't have that ability. And that's a big thing about trauma, is that trauma, because the sensations within ourselves are so unbelievably painful, our body really intelligently disconnects from that feeling. So we're not actually, if we've experienced a lot of generational or personal trauma, then we don't actually have the ability to feel within ourselves because it's been so painful.
Right.
But I was always taught when I was younger that another sense that we have is our intuition. And mm-hmm. I believe that the intuition sense and our interoceptive sense are mm-hmm. essentially the same thing. So just looked at from a different viewpoint. So when we're able to, one, heal our nervous systems, we're able to access our intuition, and the wisdom that's held within our bodies is unbelievable. And I really, throughout this work, so all of the stuff that I'm talking about, I've done it myself, because, you know, that's how you really get to know something really well, is if you go through it yourself. So I've been doing all of this healing work that I've been talking about. I've been putting myself through it. And like really recently, I've been listening to myself a lot more. And it's really like led me down some really incredible paths. Like our bodies are so smart, and we're connected to everything. Like we might not know on a conscious, conscious level, like why, but we don't need to. What we need to do is listen to our internal wisdom.
Oh my God. This is so good, Deanna. Everything you're talking about, I'm like, you need to get on stages and tell the world about this in your words, because I've heard bits and pieces of, you know, some of the stuff that you're talking about, but the way that you just put everything together is like, holy shit. I don't know how many times I'll tell you that you're blowing my mind, but this is so incredible. Like when you were talking about the, and I don't know how you say it, the interocept sense?
Interoception.
Interoception. I don't, like, I've never heard that word in my life. But as you were talking about the process of healing that, or how that's similar to intuition, and healing allows you to hear that more, that was, I really felt that. Because again, like I'm really proud of all of the healing work that I've done. And I really believe that I have a really strong intuition. And now, like, you've given me a little bit of understanding of how that happened. And yeah, that's just so incredible. Like, people need to hear this more. I'm so happy that you're doing this work, because it's, you could tell that this is something that is in your purpose. Like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. So that's really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for saying that. Sometimes I feel like I'm so not like any other occupational therapist. And a lot of times I was just like, I think I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah. Am I crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, am I just a bad therapist?
Interesting. It's interesting how our brains try to trick us, right? And I don't know if I've shared this story with you before, but when I was coming out of employment and I wanted to start my business as a coach, that's what I was thinking, because I didn't know any life coaches. I didn't know anyone who was just like, I just want to live through inspiration and inspire people. And I was just like, how can I say those words out loud? Like, people are going to laugh at me. And I remember talking to a friend who was in a career, and I was crying. And I said, you're so lucky that you're satisfied in your career and you know what you want to do, because what's meant for me is not out there. And I knew if I wanted it, I had to make it up. And that was scary as fuck. And
yeah,
here I am. And here you are, like, doing really incredible work. So incredible.
Yeah. And you know what? Something that is really a foundational for nervous system regulation is when we're in a state, it's called ventral vagal. And essentially that's like that's when we feel really good. Like, we know we're in a state of ventral vagal because we feel joyful. We feel like the world is at a good place. We feel like things, like everything is working out for me. And a hallmark of ventral vagal system is creativity. So when you heal your nervous system, like, you're able to access so much creative energy because you have space within yourself to feel that. And then, like, as I've gone through my Beadwork as Medicine program myself, it really developed. Like, I was able to, right now I'm writing a social emotional curriculum for schools, and from that, I think I'm just going to keep going and write a book. And the thing is, like, I never thought I would be able to do that because I thought I had ADHD. Like, I really thought I had ADHD for a long time because I like procrastination, like so unorganized. I'm still not very organized, but
that's but we're still entrepreneurs.
Yeah, exactly. But it was through like really healing my nervous system and like it's not healed. Like I just it's lifelong. I still have like a kind of a healing is not the right word because it's more like I guess I'm just developing a deeper relationship with myself. I believe that's more what it is. Is that I have so much more space within myself to be able to create the things that I want to create. And essentially I just wanted to I mean I'm an occupational therapist that like it kind of just worked out or was my purpose to start to become an occupational therapist, but creating like therapy programs based on mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being is what I was meant to do. And now that I have the space to do it, like I want to be able to show people that they can experience goodness in their life. They can experience goodness in their body. They can feel joyful. Like joy was not an emotion I felt very often. But that's actually one of our laws is to be joyful. So yeah.
Incredible. Okay. So I do want to ask you two more questions. If you could share something with the listeners about somatics, what would that be?
Yeah. So somatics is essentially the pathway that I used, the practices that I used to heal, to begin the healing of my nervous system. Somatics is essentially, it's a paradigm of that we live, our world is experienced through our bodies. That sounds really simplistic, but it's actually incredibly profound because most people live from the neck up. We don't feel what's going on in our body. Our mind rules everything. And somatics is... it's practices and a paradigm, which means just like a way of being and thinking, that really I live my life through my body. And so there's just been quite a few practices, which one of them I spoke about earlier is the boundaries and consent practice, which is really feeling into what does it mean when my body wants to say no? And what does it mean when my body wants to say yes? So every day I lay down and I feel into that. Mm-hmm. I feel into what does that mean? What does that feel like? What are the sensations of that? And there's a bunch of different practices that are similar to that. Mm-hmm. And they really deepened my relationship with myself. And it really helped with the healing of my nervous system.
That's really interesting. What about for people who, like, you must have people that are like, well, I don't know what you mean. Like, if I'm so stuck in my head, how do I even begin to feel in my body if I've never done that before?
Yeah, I would just ask them to, like, think about what if you are looking at your hands, and then what if you just looked at your hands and then lifted your pointer fingers? So, like, what do you feel when you lift your pointer finger? And it's just like really simple practices, because when you are really deliberately, if you're lifting your pointer finger and you're really deliberately thinking like, okay, I actually feel that there's a tightness that's happening kind of in my forearm on the top. I feel a little bit of tightness there. Or when I do this, I feel, I've had a lot of chronic pain throughout my life. So specifically within my hands and my wrist, I've had quite a bit of chronic pain. So I've kind of disassociated a little bit from my hands. So it's actually a really profound practice to consciously think about what am I feeling when I lift my pointer finger? I think I feel like a little bit of like tingling in the tip of my finger or something like that. Yeah. It's just really simple. What that is doing is it's developing the neural pathways to be able to access the interoceptive receptors on the cell of our body. So it isn't that simple. It's so simple.
It is. It's so simple because I just tried it and I'm like, I get it. I get it how you could immediately. And I mean, again, like I do feel that connection to my body, but you know, just imagining that situation, you could totally feel it. And you could use it with any body part. Like if you lift your foot off the floor, what does that feel like? And so just sort of feeling into the body as opposed to just thinking about it is what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And even like, have you ever felt into the space between your skull bone and your skin?
Well, I have a meditation that I do by, I can't remember his name right now, but he does take you through certain places and some of them is in your brain. So I feel like was weird, it was just like, what am I doing? But yeah, amazing. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's really simple, but it's very, very profound.
Holy shit, is it ever? Okay, so you talked about pain in your hands that you've had and leaning into somatics, which led you to creating a beadwork program.
Yes, that is essentially like my most favorite. It's me in a program, essentially. So I've accumulated all of the research that I've done with respect to healing the nervous system. Like what are the what's the leading therapy that actually supports healing and wellness? And I've put those all into a virtual program, or an in-person program, where it's done through beadwork. And because it was beadwork that really, well, one, beadwork actually caused me a lot of chronic pain, which I really had to sit with in my body. Like, it really made me realize how much pain I was actually holding on to. That's what beadwork did. And then it also showed me what I saw in my mind, I was able to create like in a physical manifestation. So like, I love beading, and there's so many people that love beading, and beadwork showed me that I can create beauty in my life. And that just emanated in all aspects of my life. Like since doing all of this nervous system healing work, my life has really drastically changed. Like I see the beauty in a lot of things, and I'm able to create a lot more beautiful things in my life. Mm-hmm. And the program really helped me in almost every facet of my life. It really did. There's just so much wisdom that's held within like the traditional teachings of beadwork, and that also lives in our body. Like that wisdom lives in our bodies because the cells that we have, they come from our ancestors. So we just have so much wisdom within ourselves. And this beading program that I made, it really brought all of that to the surface where I was able to access it. So yeah, it's really had a lot of change in my life for the positive.
Incredible. Holy smokes. This was such a great call. It was such a great interview. I learned more, as I'm always learning with every call with you. So you will offer speaking, training, your beading program, occupational therapy. People can reach out to you on your website at mishkanak.ca, and I'll share that in the show notes. Is there anything else that you want to share?
I guess something that's been really guiding light in my life is that whatever we want to create in our lives, we can. Whatever you want, if you have a big dream, there's a reason why you have that dream. That dream didn't just pop out of nowhere. That dream came to you because Creator knew that you could make it happen. So if you have a dream, I really encourage you to work on healing your nervous system enough that you, one, believe in yourself that you can do it. And then two, that you have the space and the creativity to make it happen.
That's incredible. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. This was awesome.
Thanks so much for being here and listening to the podcast. Miigwech, ekose, merci. I want to take every opportunity that I can to tell you that you are worthy. And if something in this message resonated with you, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And send a link to your sister, your best friends, and your cousins, because if there was something in this message that resonated, then they might want to hear about it too. If maybe taking a screenshot is your thing, share it on your Instagram story, and don't forget to tag me at jessicadumas.ca. Thank you.